Hey folks, John Ojaka here from musicmarketingmanifesto.com, and today we're doing something I think is kind of cool. We're doing the first sort of official success story that I've ever shared with you folks. I get quite a few emails from people who are using this stuff, or I'll see posts in the Insider Circle forum from people who are using this stuff and having a lot of success with it. But one person sort of stood out to me because not only is he really paying attention and doing this stuff right, but he's also more importantly, he's paying a lot of attention to metrics, and that is where people can really make this stuff work for them and actually turn a consistent profit. And he's been able to do that with pay-per-click advertising, which while there are several of you that are members of either Music Marketing Manifesto or the Insider Circle who are doing that, that is no small feat. It takes some pretty experienced marketers, sometimes years, to really master pay-per-click marketing and to be able to profit with it. And with a product like music, like CDs or albums that have such a small profit margin, again, it's really impressive. And so I asked him if he would join me on this call, this sort of success story, if you will, and kind of share that story. His name is Charlie Langer. He's on the call. Charlie, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing there, John?
I'm good. As Charlie knows, and as we set up this call, I am having some major internet difficulties, so bear with us as we try to get through this. We may have an audio bug here and there, but hopefully we get through this okay. But as I mentioned, Charlie is a member of the Insider Circle. If you're not familiar with it, the Insider Circle is a mastermind community of musicians who typically have purchased Music Marketing Manifesto and kind of want to take things to the next level. There's a forum where we all discuss what we're doing and what's working, what's not, where people ask questions and that sort of thing. And Charlie's posted quite a few things in there about some experiences he's had with pay-per-click advertising. And more interestingly, a sort of YouTube strategy that he kind of put together himself. And after reading everything, I just thought, you know, I got to get this guy on the phone and talk to him about what he's doing, because the first thing I sort of hear from people who are on my mailing list and are interested in this stuff is they ask for examples. They want to actually see this stuff in practice. And I think Charlie is a really great example of how someone who's ultimately, I mean, wouldn't you say this is correct, pretty new to this process? Were you doing any of this before you first got involved with the Insider Circle?
I had nothing going on, even a year ago.
Okay.
I'm new to this.
So marketing experience and internet experience, you're not really applying any of this stuff to your career?
No, I had, I had a web page, I had a Facebook page, I had, a Twitter page, and I was trying to get Facebook fans, and, and then I'd post, every so often, hey, come buy my CD, and, I'd spent, you were talking about pay-per-click. I'd spent actually, several hundred dollars, building up my Facebook fans, and in anticipation of my CD getting released. And so then I post this, hey, everybody, come buy my CD, and I got about, three buyers, and it was kind of discouraging.
Sure. I've certainly been there, and I think a lot of people listening to this have. Before we kind of dive into the process, why don't you tell everyone where they can check out your Squeeze page? If you're completely new to Music Marketing Manifesto, not familiar with the process that we sort of talk about and that I'm trying to teach is basically a sort of it's a slight twist on what is basically called direct response marketing, and really the only twist is that we're gearing this to music fans as opposed to just general marketing. General marketing, typically you'll see direct response marketing focused on areas that sort of have a problem and solution, and music's a little different in that it's not. When you sell someone a CD, you're not, at least in the traditional sense, solving a problem, and so you have to kind of get into the psychology of what makes people buy in a slightly different way. And again, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but that's what we're doing. That process starts with a squeeze page, and it's called a squeeze page because it's basically a web page that is designed to squeeze contact information out of the person person that has landed on that page. And the reason we do that is because all of our marketing takes place in our emails. I should clarify that sometimes you're doing it in blog posts and videos and things like that. But the real nuts and bolts of that relationship, and again, the nuts and bolts of that marketing process or that sales process is going to be taking place via email. And what that does is it allows us to turn it allows us to really control the sales process. Most musicians are sort of following an exposure model. They're getting out there, they're putting their music out there, and they're just kind of hoping that that tipping point is going to take place where they've created enough awareness that people want to then take action. What we're trying to do is, again, understand that sales process and what psychological triggers you need to touch on in order to get people to take the action that you want them to do. And again, it allows you to generate sales on a pretty consistent basis by understanding ultimately what it is that your subscribers need and want, and then ultimately walking them through that process via these emails that we're going to write and put together. And Charlie, again, has done a great job of that. And while we talk about this, I think it would serve a lot of you on a couple different levels to check out what Charlie's doing, not only to see the process that he's put together because it's actually working for him, but also because he's a great musician. So why don't you tell folks, Charlie, a little bit about your story, about the kind of music you make, and then tell them where they can sign up to your Squeeze page to kind of get a real hands-on feel or take on what it is that you put together.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'm a saxophonist. I play jazz and smooth jazz. And basically, I have been working as a sideman. I was telling John earlier, just working in other bands. But about 2 years ago, I released my own solo CD. And, I was trying to, recover my costs and sell my CD, and as I was saying, I got my Twitter page, my Facebook page, my content page, and was just sending out messages saying come buy my CD, and it was pretty dead.
right.
So anyway, I ran in. Let's see. I think I ran into John through a mailing that he did through indiemusic.com, and so signed up with Music Marketing Manifesto and got my Squeeze page up, started doing the follow-up emails and getting my autoresponder series going, and what do you know, all of a sudden I'm selling consistently selling CDs, bringing in a couple hundred a month, and I'm going, wow, this is pretty cool. I could actually build on this. And, as I was telling John, more than that has happened since then. I'd like to tell you that I'm, really continuing to, build my online marketing, but I've actually had to step back, for a little bit, because I was faced with the decision, okay, well, now I've got all these people interested in me. I've been a sideman all these years. I don't really have a solo act, don't have a sound system, don't have a solo band per se. And so what am I going to do with this now that all these people are interested in me? So, some of you guys that are already, have your act together, you're in a better spot, So I've actually, the last 2 months, I know it's gotten a little quieter on the, I've been quieter in the forum just because I am trying to, get my own solo act together.
Right. I'm sorry?
No, I'd say, so anyway, that's kind of my story. It's cool. Now I have people, I was telling John earlier that, I play with my tribute band and nobody ever pays attention to the sax player, normally, but now I have people coming up afterwards, hey, I've got your CD, I'm a huge fan of yours, would you sign my CD, hey, would you be interested in playing, at such and such a winery, or, would you come do a house concert for me? So anyway, that's all pretty cool.
That's really awesome. I mean, and just to back up a couple steps, just so I understand it, you're basically saying that the marketing has been working sort of so well that you don't have time to do it because you're too busy out playing shows. Is that right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. You messed me up, John. I was, my original intent was, okay, well, I'm going to, once I saw it starting to work, I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to multiply my efforts and sell a lot of CDs, and you can certainly do that, obviously, as you know.
Sure.
I've got the systems in place. They're scalable. They're duplicatable. And if that's all I wanted to do was sell CDs, I would just continue down the path that I was on. But now all of a sudden I have people interested in me, and I'm going, is that all I want to do? And for some people, that may be great. Maybe that's all you want to do is sell CDs. Maybe all you want to do is, music licensing and that kind of thing. But
sure.
I have the performing bug, so I want to get out and play.
And just to clarify, though, you are saying that it's your list that has actually helped sort of explode the live opportunities, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not an either-or thing is what I really want to try to emphasize to people, that if you want to go out and do live shows, building this list and doing this online thing is still absolutely the way to go.
It can only help you. In fact, I put a post on the forum last night, what I did is I took my AWeber list and I went to this website. You can go on the forum. I forgot the name of it now, but you can Google it or whatever. But anyway, you can map basically where all your subscribers are, and I think that's a very cool planning tool. If you're wanting to plan a tour or a house concert tour or whatever, you can see how many people you've got in what cities.
I think I'm trying to look this up while you're talking. Actually, did you put this up? I know I have it somewhere here. I'm searching my inbox for your recent post. Where the heck was it?
Oh, here it is. It's called ZMaps.
ZMaps. Sorry. Stepped on
you. Yeah, ZEEMAPS.com.
Cool. And how does that work? Because this is really interesting. It's something I have not heard of that site. You upload basically your CSV file from AWeber into ZMaps, and it just kind of tells you where everybody is?
Yeah. I took a subset of that list and then took out, the columns that were irrelevant. Of course, you get a lot of info that they're collecting.
Sure.
At AWeber. But I just focused on, names, email addresses, and their IP address, and made a CSV file out of it, uploaded it to this site. And there's quite a few different options. What I posted was just kind of an overview map of some of my subscribers in the United States. And, you can see there's, circles with, numbers of subscribers in each city. But, as you zoom in, you can actually have it show you names and email addresses of, who's in that particular city.
Right,
so
right.
You can do more with it than just, the high-level map that I posted at the forum. But anyway, I just say all that to say, if you want this to be a support, to your live, playing, you can definitely do that.
Sure, sure. And by the way, I think we skipped right over it. I mean, what is why don't you give it out to everyone, the address to your Squeeze page, so people can again not only check out your process, but ideally listen to your music, and everyone should. Charlie's good at what he does, so why don't you give that web address?
Okay, thanks, John. Yeah, it's www.charlielanger, and that's Charlie with an EY, so Charlie Langer.net.
Cool, and I'll try to put a link up beneath this audio to where people can check that out. But depending on how you're sort of consuming this interview, if you're listening to it on your iPod or something like that, that obviously won't work. But on the post, I will put a link, so you can check that out. You should sign up. This is somebody who's doing very well with this process, and again, converting consistently. We're going to talk about that a lot more in a minute here. But this is a successful sales funnel that Charlie's put together, and it's worth seeing. Now, Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like I'm remembering that you said somewhere that your background was as an engineer. Am I totally getting that wrong?
Well,
Or
I was actually
you said
I
something. We're
okay.
talking about statistics, that you had some background in statistics, and for some reason, engineer popped.
Yeah.
What's your background there?
Yeah. Well, okay. I was actually a music major, but like many people, you go to school, you learn how to be a good musician. You don't know how to market yourself, so I was floundering, and after a while, I'm like, I'm making some money, but I'm going, I don't want to do the starving artist thing.
Sure.
So I started looking for a real job, and it's kind of a long, convoluted story, but basically I got into a position where I'm overseeing cleanups of hazardous waste sites, and that's a long ways from music, but
Well, not in some of the bars that I've worked in, but I take your point.
But anyway, there are a lot of statistics involved, when you're dealing with soil and groundwater concentrations. And anyway, so I had to bone up on my statistics. So.
Right. I think that's one of the things that's made Charlie really stand out, is he clearly pays a lot of attention to his metrics, and that's really key to this. Again, we'll get into this more in a second, but when you start paying attention to things like your subscriber value, and what that means, by the way, is basically the average amount of money that you're earning per subscriber, you can really start to scale this up. You can go out and look for paid advertising opportunities where you while nothing's guaranteed, you essentially know that you're going to profit, because let's say your subscriber value is 50 cents. You now know you can go out and spend up to 25 cents to acquire a new subscriber and still be turning, a good profit on that. And when it gets scalable is when it starts to get really exciting, because you can somewhat automate the entire process. I mean, you need to be a real living, breathing human being who's putting out new content and sending out, putting up blog posts and sending out emails, but the sales process itself can largely be automated, and you just need to, at that point, expand your traffic, and you'll see, you'll basically be giving yourself a pay raise with everything you do to do exactly that, to expand your traffic. But I'm worried that we're getting into too many sort of, highfalutin concepts for everyone who's completely new to this. So let's explain what the sales funnel is to people. Let's explain to everyone listening as best as we can illustrate this without pictures, what someone experiences when they come to your page. I know, again, Charlie's doing a lot of different things to generate traffic. He's been doing some pay-per-click advertising. He's been doing some free YouTube advertising. We'll talk about his YouTube strategy in a little bit. But after the traffic, let's say they click on one of your ads and they come to your squeeze page. Try to describe to folks listening what the experience is from that point on, from clicking on your ad all the way up to ultimately making a purchase.
Okay. Well, when they click on an ad, they get to my, like you say, my squeeze page. The squeeze page is basically just a page. It's very simple. I'm looking at mine right now. There's no buttons on it. It's just a page that says, "Hey, get your free download of the title song from the album Never the Same by saxophonist Charlie Langer. Is featured on the Weather Channel, smoothjazz.com, and Smooth Jazz Radio." And then there are some press quotes, and then down below there's sign up to get your free song. And then I have my the place where they actually enter their name and email address. So they sign up, they get a automated response back saying, "Please confirm your email address." And then, my first email goes out, which is basically just, okay, here's your first free track, and it has a link for it. Hope you enjoy. 5 days later, they get another email. I just couldn't help myself, but I've got to give you another free track. This is another song off my album. It's a remix. So there's that email, and then a few days after that, they get another email saying, "Hey, here's my video. you know, please enjoy my video. It's getting about 500, you know, views a day now. And after that, you know, there's another 3 or 4 days, and they get an email saying, hey, I've got a deal for you. And, you know, this is where the marketing language really, you know, that John was talking about really comes into play. You know, you you try and you know, make this, you know, appear, you know, well, it's you know, you make it appear scarce and, you know, hey, you've got a limited time and I offer a price discount and, you know, apply some sales pressure there. But,
sure.
Again, I've been building that relationship after, you know, over the last 2 weeks.
Sure.
And so they get that and I offer them a deal and, you know, 2 days later, you know, either they take me up or they don't, and they get another email saying, hey, you know, the deal's about to go away. And, you know, if they don't respond at that time, they get put on my normal, you know, newsletter mailing list. And at the same time, I was, you know, sharing with John that I do have some follow-up emails after that, but they're more, you know, tamed down, hey, here's another free track. And what I've done is just I've tried to make it kind of a, well, you know, a subscription kind of idea where, you know, somebody signs up to my list and, you know, I give them my practice sessions. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, some people might think, you know, well, you know, gee, that sounds enticing. But,
right.
You know, you'd be surprised. I mean, you know, people love my hearing me practice. And,
sure.
You know, so some of you out there, you know, thinking, well, what can I offer of value? And, you know, if I was a singer-songwriter and, you know, I'm a saxophonist, you know, so it's not like I can, you know, just whip out a guitar and you know, sing, you know, in this informal setting, you know, but if I was a singer-songwriter, that's what I'd be doing.
Sure.
You know, I just, anyway, that's, people dig the informal, you know, hey, this is the real me. This is me in my practice room. And frankly, you know, they say, hey, this, you know, it sounds like you ought to put this on your next album.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I can imagine. I mean, obviously, we want to have our professional stuff out there as well, and that goes a long way. But there's, you know, there's a lot of professionally recorded music out there and a lot of slick music videos. And while certainly they're effective at times, you can also just kind of go numb to it all. I can imagine putting out something like that, just your practice sessions, is really going to, I don't know, like you said, build that relationship. You're going to create an intimate experience and give them a real sense of who you actually are, and let them feel like they've now invested some time in you as an individual. And I think that's going to go a long way when you follow up down the road to say, hey, want to take a shot and drop $10 and buy my actual album.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I just would encourage people, go take a look at my, you know, Facebook page and just, you know, I have so many people, you know, who give me positive comments on my practice sessions, you know,
right.
Probably, you know, maybe even more so than you know, my actual album release.
right. Well, yeah, I guess that's a topic for another discussion, man. But whatever you're doing, it does seem to be working because you're selling. But let's talk about some of those elements, you know, breaking it down, because the process, it's not an accident. Everything you're doing has a sort of specific purpose behind it, starting with the squeeze page, which, as you said, it's very simple. And I find a lot of resistance from musicians who I'm trying to teach this concept of a squeeze page to, and they can't let go of the idea of having music samples and video samples and all that content that musicians are so used to putting on the site. Those content-rich sites, by the way, are fine, and there's room for them, and you should have one. Charlie has one. I have both a squeeze page and a content-rich site. There's absolutely a place for that. You want to send industry people to a site like that. You want to send your existing fans, once they are subscribers, to a site like that,
right.
So that there's a lot for them to consume. But when you're driving cold traffic, all you want is the lead. You want the chance to, as Charlie described, build the relationship with them. And it's almost universally proven that a squeeze page is going to get you a better conversion rate. And again, for everyone totally new to all the marketing language, conversion rate simply means a person who's taken the action that you want them to take, which in this case is to sign up for your list. We're not just, this isn't just about spamming people with big buy now messages, as Charlie suggested. This is about building a real relationship, getting people to know who you are as a person, as an artist, and then down the road, I mean, I should qualify that. Sometimes you might market straight out of the gate, but ultimately it would be a lot more subtle. And ultimately what you're trying to do is build that relationship and market to them somewhere down the road, not only once, but time and time again with additional offers for future albums, merchandise, possibly even live shows and that sort of thing. The thing with the squeeze page is that you really just want to have two options, sign up or leave. And certainly a lot of people are going to leave. More people are going to leave than not. However, typically on a good squeeze page, you're going to see a conversion rate of around 30%. They range from probably anywhere from 20 to almost 50%, although 50% would be quite high. That, for example, on a blog, on my squeeze page, I'm making up these numbers, getting somewhere. It's low currently because I send so much traffic to it, and I have all this sort of marketing traffic out there. If I reset it and ran straight traffic to it, I'm sure it would be higher, but I think it runs typically with fresh traffic about 35%. But right now I was looking at my stats and it was hovering around 20%, whereas my blog was at like 4%, because when people have all that content to look at, you satisfy the appetite. People kind of are curious. They read your bullet points, they read your enticing copy, your headline that sort of makes the bold claim of what your music has to offer, and if they want to know more, they've got to sign up. And so you'll typically see a lot higher conversion rate than if they were on your content site and they could hit a play button and listen to you, or hit a play button on a video and watch you. Once they kind of get a taste for it, people are inclined, even if they like it, to go, okay, that was cool, but now I know what it is and I'm busy, so I'm going to move on. But if the relationship, or if that next step is never going to be taken unless they actually hand over their email address, then or when that's the case, then you're going to see a much higher conversion rate. I mean, what kind of conversion rate are you seeing on your squeeze page?
Well, it depends, you know, as you said, you know, the traffic source and which page it actually is. But let's see, I'm just looking over my stats right now. Like my Twitter page is, you know, the squeeze page that I send them to, they're getting, it's 32%.
Sorry to interrupt you. Just to clarify,
okay.
The Twitter page, you mean Twitter traffic, when the traffic to your squeeze page is coming from Twitter, correct?
Yeah, well, what I have is for each traffic source, I set up a squeeze page for that source.
Right.
You know, so my when I say my Twitter page, you know, that's the squeeze page, you know, that I'm sending my traffic to from Twitter.
Sure.
You know, and so that's 30%.
I was just going to clarify to anyone listening. Again, Charlie's great with the statistics. The reason he's doing this is so he can track his traffic, because each traffic source will convert differently, and it's really important to know that information. So again, you can do these calculations and figure out what you can afford to spend to either have somebody do it for you, or to spend directly on advertising. And in addition to that, sometimes you might see, hey, my Twitter traffic is converting great, but my Facebook traffic just isn't converting. And to save time and energy, you might just knock Facebook out of your strategy. Again, this
right.
is hypothetical, but so go on. So your Twitter.
So you know, I've been focusing on you know, as we talked about earlier, on YouTube, because that is converting very well, and it's not, you know, not that I'm just getting good conversion. It's about 30%, but
right.
it's a lot of traffic coming from there.
Right, right.
So that would.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
Pay-per-click. On the other hand, you know, I've been getting about 20. Well, it's at 23% right now.
That's
and,
cool. Yeah,
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Pay-per-click doesn't typically convert quite as well, actually, as other forms of traffic. The nice thing about pay-per-click, though, is that it's, you can sort of set it and forget it. It's Facebook.
Set and forget, and I love it for that reason.
Facebook traffic has some management that you got to do. You'll see Facebook traffic wane if you're not constantly updating it, which is a little frustrating. But search engine or paid search engine traffic, you're doing it through MSN, correct?
I'm sorry?
You're doing your PPC through MSN right now, through the Bing?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and that's very, you know, it's simple. It's set and forget. You got to monitor it.
Sure.
But like I just tweaked it a little bit last night, just, you know, revising, you know, how much I'm bidding on a pay-per-click ad.
Right. But before we go too far off into traffic, getting back onto that sales funnel and talking about how each aspect or each stage is very specific, and there's a specific process that you're trying to accomplish there. Basically, you touched on, I made a few notes while you were talking, but you touched in on the opt-in process. A lot of people don't sort of understand this, but your autoresponder is really essential. It's everything. This is fundamentally email marketing. If you don't have a good email management system, you're going to see poor deliverability rates, and you're not going to get any customers as a result. And a lot of people are trying to make this work by, you know, simply buying some kind of a self-hosted email management system, or even, I don't know, some people were trying to store this all in their Gmail account and do it manually. It is not going to work. You're going to, I mean, for the $20 a month or whatever an autoresponder goes for these days, as a starting, you know, the starting price, I have AWeber, and I'm paying a fortune because I have so many lists, but I think, what is it, $20 or $30?
Yeah, I think it's 20.
Something like that, yeah. It's so well worth it. All you need to do there is sell 2 extra CDs a month and you've covered your costs. And too many people are trying to skirt that or avoid that cost, and they're just not getting the deliverability rates that they need. So that's that. But you also want to require that everybody opts in. You can get into some advanced marketing where you avoid the opt-in step, but not, you know, I don't want to bog people down with too much information. What that basically means is that people click a link that says they do, in fact, want to receive emails from you. This helps you keep a good reputation with the different email providers. Email providers like Gmail and Yahoo, they're really monitoring what's going on. If you send out 1,000 messages from your own server, let's say you're hosting an autoresponder on your own server, or even using one of the cheaper solutions that are out there, and they see 1,000 messages go out at once with basically the same copy in them, they know something's up. And if you don't have a good reputation, all it takes is a few clicks of that spam button, suddenly your IP is basically blocked from most people's inboxes, and your deliverability rate goes, you know, falls to the floor. A company like AWeber has personal relationships with these different providers, and if something's going on with the deliverability right there on the phone, showing these companies the audit trail, showing people that people actually clicked a link to be on your list, and it's just it's a really important step. You, of course, we've talked about it a lot. You focused on building relationships with your audience, and that's really key there. You know, you're letting them into your world by sharing your practice sessions. So by the end of it, by the time you're really hitting them hard with any kind of a sales offer, you know, it's not seen, at least if you're doing this right, as something obnoxious. You're just someone that
right.
know that's trying to do what he does, which is make music, and it's only natural that you're gonna want to sell some music, and it's sort of the relationship you built complements the fact that you're going to be offering them some kind of a limited time offer with the discount that you mentioned. But another thing you touched on, which again is sort of part, it's a deliberate part of the process, is the social proof. You mentioned how you were getting these, you know, X amount of video plays each month. Like these little things, these are all triggers. When people see this, you know, and they can click on your video and see the high count, or go to a blog post and see that there's 100 comments or whatever it is you've got, that instills a lot of confidence, because people don't necessarily want to spend money with something that's just some guy in his basement, you know, who has an audience of 5. They want to be part of something big. They want to be part of a tribe. And when you can show people that you are sort of the leader of a tribe, there's this psychological thing that happens where interest goes up, desire goes up, and people are more likely to buy. So you're doing a nice job of that. And then probably the most important part of this is that you mentioned scarcity. Scarcity is not the only sales trigger, but it is by far, at least in my experience and the experience of pretty much every marketer I know, it is the most powerful. When you say to someone, hey, pick up my CD, it's available now, that only goes so far. When you say, hey, pick up my CD, but it's only going to be available for the next 72 hours, suddenly people need to make a decision. as to whether or not they want to get off the fence. And that is really one of the biggest obstacles to selling, is that people would rather stay on the fence for as long as possible. And if you take away that luxury and say, it's now or never because I'm offering this great deal, or there's a limited pressing, or I'm, you know, giving 2-for-1, or it's 20% off, or whatever you can put together, you're going to, again, just like the squeeze page, force people to say yes or no. And when you do that, almost always you're going to see a lot more people saying yes than they would otherwise. Of course, you might lose a few sales here or there, but overall you're picking up far more than you would otherwise. So I just kind of wanted to, again, sort of explain all that so people understand what we're talking about. Is there anything else I'm leaving out that you feel I need to touch on there?
Not there. I think you've covered it. I know that's, you know, that's what made me sign up to Music Marketing Manifesto.
Sure.
And I was like, oh crud, I've only got, you know, a couple more days. And
right.
Then when I signed up, I realized what you were doing. I go, oh man, he got me.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't fake. I took it off the market, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not doing anything that's fake. I'm incentivizing people to take the action that I want them to take, and it's a business, and it's legitimate, and it's legitimate for you as a musician when you're doing it. It's not legitimate if it's bullshit, if it's a limited time offer, and then it's really available forever for everyone. But as long as you're controlling that process and you mean it, you know, sure, it is, it's intentional. You know, obviously, if leaving it on the market forever sold more copies, we'd all be doing that. But forcing people to take action is going to result in more sales, and that's why we do it. But you have to mean it. And I get emails from people all the time who are like, hey, the offer came down, and I still want to get it, and you kind of got to say no, sorry. You know, unless the person was sick or there was some legitimate reason, you know, and your heart goes out to them, you got to kind of stick by this stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while it's intentional, I don't feel that it's BS in any way, because it, you know, you mean it. You're basically saying, hey, I want you to take action, so I'm going to give you a really great deal, and you don't have to take action now, but you're not going to get this deal later.
Yep.
So it's an ethical bribe, basically. let's move on a little bit to traffic. So that's the sales funnel. That's the sales process that's been converting people successfully for Charlie. But what I think I mentioned this earlier, what's been interesting is Charlie kind of developed his own YouTube strategy, and this is something that I haven't tried. It's something that I thought was interesting, and Charlie has been cool enough to be willing to share that process with everyone listening. Traffic is where a lot of people get stuck, so and you've developed your own traffic method here. So why don't you tell folks what you're doing to use YouTube to drive traffic to your squeeze page?
Okay, sure. You know, basically, it's actually, you know, if you're a member of Music Marketing Manifesto and you've looked at John's Twitter strategy, it's actually fairly similar. You know, basically, you're researching, you know, who are your, you know, potential prospects. In my case, on YouTube, it's pretty easy and I use a tool called Tube Toolbox.
I'm sorry, what was that? I had a little audio glitch there. Say that again.
Oh, it's called Tube Toolbox.
Okay.
And it's some software that makes, you know, researching and making friend requests and messaging, which I'll be talking about, but it makes that all, you know, much easier, much quicker. But the first thing I do is I, you know, research my prospects. And so what I'm doing is I'm looking for people who, for example, post videos of artists that are similar to me, so I can easily search through. In fact, you could actually do this manually. You know, go to YouTube and do a search for, say, Dave Cause, and you've got all these pages of you know, people who have posted Dave Cause videos.
Right.
Well, you know, the people, if they're posting those videos, you know, they like that music, so you've got your targeted audience there.
Right.
So Tube Toolbox allows you to just scrape all those usernames and compile a list of people that are, you know, interested in that kind of music. So once you have your list, then, you know, basically it's sending friend requests. And again, Tube Toolbox makes that easy. You can send them out about every 1 to 2 minutes before YouTube will basically shut you down. And what I mean by that is, you know, YouTube does allow software, you know, to be used to automate these processes. But what their policy is you can't use something that will do it quicker than you can actually do manually. You know,
gotcha.
So if they start seeing too many friend requests going out, you know, they don't cancel your account or anything. They just limit you. They just start saying, okay, you can't send any more friend requests.
Gotcha.
And so anyway, I understand that. And, you know, they don't want it to turn into another, you know, MySpace. And I dig that, and that's why I like YouTube. So anyway, you send out your friend requests. Those that respond, then you have, you know, an option to message them. And again, I use Tube Toolbox. I have about 20 messages that I've come up with, and I rotate amongst those. But basically, the gist is you know, hey, I appreciate your friendship on YouTube. If you'd like to pick up an alternate mix of my single, you know, here's the link. And, of course, that link is the link to my squeeze page.
Right.
And so I send out those messages. And, again, you can automate this. And I found it a very effective way of driving traffic. Now, the cool thing is, and this is where I say I had started to go down this road and actually throttle back, you know, somewhat because, you know, now I'm getting all this these requests to play live and I'm having to kind of work backwards a bit. But the cool thing is, you know, you can build YouTube pages around themes, you know. So I have my own YouTube page, you know, which is just my main one, you know,
sure.
Charlie Langer. But, you know, I've built others around themes, you know, for example, music to relax with.
Right.
You know? So there, you know, when you might be able to, you're going to reach people that, you know, haven't necessarily posted a Dave Koz video, but they're interested in, you know, it doesn't mean they're not interested in your music. Doesn't mean that they don't fit in your demographic. They just haven't happened to, you know, post a Dave Koz video.
Right.
You know, so when you set up, you know, thematic YouTube channels, you can send requests to people who, you know, who've posted things that might relate, you know, like, you know, jazz is often associated with, you know, wineries, you know.
Sure.
I live in this area and you know, I like to go up to Napa, you know, go wine tasting and, you know, you see, you know, jazz quartet in there or, you know, whatever. But my point is, you know, like you can build a YouTube channel around, say, you know, wine and music, or, you know, like, anyway, you can build different themes, and then when you do your searches for friends, you know, you target, you know, keywords that are related to that. So, basically, you can have a bunch of YouTube channels, and you don't need to manage these all yourself. In fact, I'd recommend that you don't.
For sure.
And that's where I was headed, was actually hiring people to manage these channels for me. And, you know, there are some challenges with that. You know, if you, it's kind of this balance between, you know, how much you're willing to pay and the quality of work that you're willing to accept.
Sure.
And, you know, if you start going hiring overseas, then there's the problematic, you know, the problems of language barriers and, you know, computers, you know, their computers are not necessarily like our computers. But anyway, you can certainly find people. It just takes time and an effort to find good people.
Sure.
Another way you could do this is with, and this is actually one that I have avoided until now, but, you know, your street team.
Sure.
Can do this for you.
Sure, and, yeah. To anyone listening, there's a lot of free screen capture software out there I think Cam Studio is one that's free. There's paid stuff as well. I use a paid one called Camtasia, but basically it allows you to just record what you see on your screen, and you can easily put together some quick tutorial videos for any process that you're doing that's sort of a repetitive process that doesn't take much creativity, and you can just sort of film the process, and then you can go out and ask your volunteer street team to go and do it for you, as well as, like Charlie said, you can explore outsourcing. I've done outsourcing both with people domestically via Craigslist, or even I'm currently got my sister employed doing a lot of stuff for me. You can go that route with friends and family. Of course, you're going to pay more that way, but I've also used people overseas. I've used people in India and the Philippines. I had someone more or less full time. They actually worked about 6 hours a day in the Philippines as a student who was really happy to work for $250 a month. And, you know, he was pretty competent. I started needing stuff that was required a little too much creativity, so ultimately that stopped. But he was, you know, at least as far as I understand, that's a decent wage, at least for a college student over there. And yeah, it takes a lot of sorting through a lot of people to find some good candidates, but there are good people out there who will work pretty cheap.
Yeah, so you get, you know, 20, you know, YouTube sites that are, you know, feeding to your list, you know, 5 to 10, you know, subscribers, you know your subscriber value, you know how much you can pay, you know, somebody to
sure.
do that.
Sure, yeah, and you can basically monitor their results and figure out if you're profiting off of each individual or not, and can the ones that you're not. And like you said, if it's your street team, then obviously the more the merrier. Yeah. Now, you mentioned different channels. Last I knew, I don't know if it's changed, YouTube didn't allow multiple channels per account. So you're creating individual accounts for each channel, or has something changed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I have, different accounts.
And you're doing different accounts. Why? Is it because you want the identity of the channel to really match the interests of the people? So if you're going after people who've shown interest in relaxing music or music to relax to, I think was what you said, that as opposed to the Charlie Langer channel, what's the thinking there, that a person who has posted videos on relaxation comes to your channel and the channel's so targeted for relaxation music that the kinship between their interests and what you're doing is obvious? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Like why do it that way as opposed to just multiplying your efforts and sending everybody to the same page or the same channel rather?
To the same. Well, because you can only, you know, as you say, I suppose you could, you know, I've got, you know, my Charlie Langer page, and I suppose I could set up a Charlie Langer, you know, 2-page, but
right.
you know, basically, you can only send from that account a certain number of friend requests.
Gotcha.
And you can only send out a certain number of messages. So you really want more channels so that you can send out more friend requests
sure,
and more
sure.
messages, because you know you're limited to, you know, a friend request every minute or two, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I understand. So it's not unlike Twitter or like even MySpace got to be near the end there, where there's a limit before your account gets in trouble, I take it.
Exactly.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That's really great. It is almost identical to the Twitter strategy. It's just that YouTube is your source. And YouTube's a really, really great source. Twitter is great, and as you say, you're seeing a pretty good conversion rate from it, but there's also a lot of spam on Twitter, so you kind of got to weed through that. And YouTube, at least I've found it,
exactly.
it tends to be, there's more real people sort of, you know, behind the accounts than so many of the Twitter accounts that are out there.
There are a lot of cool things that I just really like about YouTube. I mean, you know, one thing to think about is, you know, as I shared on the forum, you know, when you get a lot of views on your video, you know, that's really going to help you in the search engines. You know, I'm on the top, you know.
Sure.
2 to 3, you know, you search under smooth jazz saxophone or smooth jazz sax, you know, I'm right up there on the top in Google, but it's because, you know, I have a video that's been doing very well. The other,
sure.
you know, cool thing is, you know, I mean, think of all the people going, you know, that are looking for music, You know, I don't know about you, but I actually started and had started, you know, going to YouTube. You know, you want to learn a new song or a cover tune or you know, whatever, you just, I don't, you know, go to iTunes as much as I used to. I go to YouTube.
Yeah. No, I'm doing the same. People don't realize it, but YouTube's actually the second biggest search engine out there. People don't think of it as a search engine, but so many people are out there every day entering keywords into that search field to find videos related to their interests, and you are neglecting an enormous percentage of the population, certainly an enormous amount of traffic if you neglect YouTube as part of your traffic strategy. And YouTube, truthfully, is not something that I've yet spent a ton of time with. I've certainly done some playing around, and I have my channel out there, and I have, you know, some videos out there, but I haven't focused on it, and it's something I really need to do more of. So I found this really interesting that you've done well with it. I definitely think this is something I'm going to play with. And while you were talking, I went and did a little search for a Tube Toolbox. So I'll put a link below this audio as well. I'll put some kind of a little resources center together, and people can check that out.
Do I have time for one more YouTube trick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. One thing that people don't realize is you can actually have a call to action pop up on your YouTube video.
And sure,
it's
sure.
It's very easy to do that, and it's free. Basically, all you need to do is sign up for an AdWords account and promote that video. And that doesn't mean you actually have to pay to promote that video. It just means you have to offer it. You have to bid on it. You know, so for example, if you're only bidding, you know, 1 cent, you know, per click, you know, that's it's not going to get clicked on.
Right.
But because you've done that, YouTube will allow you to put a call to action on your video. So I have one that says, you know, free download, you know, experience why smoothjazz.com says the songs are, I forget what they said, amazing or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
But anyway, little brain fart there. But anyway, it pops up, and, you know, so when they click on that call to action, you know, it takes them right to my squeeze page.
Sure.
And so I get some additional traffic through that.
And just to clarify, anyone who's unfamiliar, AdWords is basically Google's pay-per-click search network. All those ads you see over there on the right-hand column, or those first one or two that you sometimes see above the organic search results, those are all paid ads. And Charlie's saying that if you go up and set up an account, you can run ads. And clarify that process for me. It's free if they're on your own videos.
Well,
I wasn't quite following you on the one pay-per-click thing.
Yeah, okay. As long as you are promoting that video, you can put a call to action on that video.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so my first fear was wow, so I've got to pay for this. But, you know, I just started bidding, you know, like I say, 1 cent per click. So because I'm not bidding very much, it's not getting placed high on the page, and so nobody's clicking on it. So I'm not really paying for it. I just had to go through that process. You have to promote your video in order to get a call to action pop-up on your video. That makes sense?
I believe so. So it's free for you because it's your video, but you technically have to be in their search engine overall, or in their search network overall as a paid advertiser.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. So
yeah, you have to be a paid advertiser. You have to be promoting that video. But just because you're promoting that video doesn't mean that you have to promote it for, you know, 50 cents a click in order to actually get clicks.
Right. But when someone clicks on the link that's in your actual video because you own it, you're not being charged the 1 cent? Is that right? Okay.
Exactly. You get a free call to action on your own video. And so when they click on that, you know, it's that part is free.
Right. And where did you actually find the information? Was that on? I'm very familiar with AdWords, but I've not come across this in AdWords. Did you find that information on the AdWords site, or did you find it somewhere in the YouTube?
It's in YouTube.
Okay.
And when you go to your account, there's a place where you can sign up to promote your video, and that's what you want to do. You want to sign up to promote your video, and you know, then I'll ask how much you want to bid,
right,
you know, per click.
And somewhere in that process, they're going to give you code that you can somehow place upon your video, or how does part of it work out?
Okay, well, once you've signed up to promote, then when you go into your, let me just take a look at this, but it's basically in your YouTube channel. Let's see, if you go to your account settings, I'm sorry, it's in, okay, you know how you go to your videos,
mm-hmm.
and then there's edit video, and if you have that as a promoted video in your edit videos, you then get an option to be able to have a call to action, but that doesn't show up unless you're promoting the video.
Gotcha. That's good to know.
Yeah,
it does perfectly. That's really good to know. If hopefully people were paying attention to that, because that's a good bit of advice there. And again, just to recap, basically you can go and if you sign up with AdWords to promote your video and set that at 1 cent, Charlie's suggesting, so that basically it's so low that you ultimately don't get any traction within the paid network. Which if you did, it probably wouldn't be a bad thing for one penny of
right.
you. You're then allowed, you then have an option that will appear in your edit video section of your account that will allow you to place your own ad on your video. So again, it gives you an active hyperlink within your video that helps you drive even more traffic to your page. I believe annotations work similarly, don't they? I don't personally like the way they look, but I think you can use annotations to include some links. I'm not really.
Yeah, you can, but like you say, to me they look hokey.
Yeah.
It's much cooler to have a in my opinion, a call to action, clickable, you know, ad kind of thing come up and then, you know, disappear.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And there's something more streamlined and just generally professional about it, I think.
Yeah.
That is good stuff. And I'll see what links I can find on YouTube for people there and put that in the resources, which should be below this audio by the time you're listening to this. Let's see. We're starting to run on for a while here, so I kind of want to start to wrap up. But I wanted to quickly kind of address your specific metrics, because people always want to know this stuff. They want to know what kind of conversion rates different people are experiencing. And again, we've talked on some that your squeeze pages are converting around 30%, some of your better ones, some of your, you know, obviously they're different for each traffic source. You mentioned that pay-per-click was converting a little bit lower, which is normal. What are you seeing in terms of sales? What's your subscriber value? Do you have any sort of insight that you can share with folks there?
Sure. You know, what I do is just take all my online sales and divide it by, you know, my number of subscribers. And, you know, that's not very sophisticated, I realize. And but
that's what I do.
But that's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, spreadsheet.
So that way, you know how much each subscriber is worth, and you know how much, you know, I'm like, John said, I'm experimenting with pay-per-click advertising, and right now I'm paying about 9 cents a click, but I know that my subscriber value is 70 cents. So,
right. Which is huge. That ratio there is fantastic. I mean, I would suggest that if you can just break even to keep doing this, because you're going to be building your list, and you'll have opportunities to promote to these people, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, you know, as you put out more and more albums and come up with more and more merch.
Right.
But 9 cents a click. Was it 9 cents a click or?
Yeah, nine cents a click. So, and then my conversion rate is close to 25%. So I'm just using round numbers. So say it was, you know, say I was paying 10 cents a click, and, you know, I was converting at 25 cents, then I know that I'm paying 40 cents for a subscriber. Makes sense? You following me?
Certainly.
So if I'm paying 40 cents for a subscriber, but that subscriber is worth 70 cents, then I'm clearing 30 cents on every click.
Which is still huge. I mean, like I said, I know a lot of very experienced marketers who have a very difficult time. Often they can't make money on the front end or with their initial product. They're actually taking a loss just to get people into the funnel so that they can sell additional products to them down the line. And that's a very common model actually, with pay-per-click. And the fact that you're able to turn a profit right out of the gate with a product that only brings you in about, what is it, $10? How much do you profit on each CD? I don't know what you're charging.
Yeah, I okay. Well, it varies. if they buy at my, you know, my normal site, you know, it's $15. If they, you know, buy my special offer, it's $10. It's roughly, you know, $12. I'd say it averages out.
Right. And so to be profiting with pay-per-click advertising on something like that, again, it's really impressive, and it's particularly impressive because you're so new to this whole thing. Like I said, I know a lot of very experienced marketers who can do that. So well done.
Well, thank you.
And the really nice thing about that is, again, that it's scalable. You know, as you mentioned, you're kind of busy and you have sort of a lot to do here. But when you really, once you started driving a lot of pay-per-click traffic and you really do have a good handle on those metrics, you can start exploring media buys and things like, I mean, media buys are very risky, you know, if you don't know what you're doing. So just to qualify that. But when you get into that, you are buying just massive amounts of traffic. And if you've got a system in place that you trust where you spend, you know, $100 and make $150 back, you know, profiting $50, just multiply that at that point. You know, it's obvious. You know,
Right.
why spend $10 a day when you could spend $10,000 a day? The more you could spend, the better, and your business will just grow. And that's and again, I just get excited with this stuff because musicians don't have business models. You know, they go out there and there's so much just sort of hope and praying involved, and none of that is required when you're doing something like this. This is a real business model. I'm not aware of the major labels doing stuff like this. They're relying on mainstream branding, and this is something that puts you in the driver's seat and puts you in control of your destiny. And it does require some work, and it does require being smart and paying attention to things. It's not going to happen, you know, by accident. You're not really very likely to just sort of luck your way through it. You got to pay attention like Charlie's doing, but it's really exciting because the sky's the limit for you at this point.
Cool. Yeah. You know, as you said that, you know, so many musicians, and myself included in the beginning, it was just like, you know, you try one thing and, you know, you pay some money. It's like, you know, buying a lottery ticket, you know. So I bought some, you know, a publicist, you know,
Sure.
and spent, you know, a little more than a grand on that. And it's like, okay, well, let's see how that works, you know. And well, okay, I got a little bit, but not near enough to recover my costs. So then I did a radio promotion, and you know, there's another, you know, $1,500, and it's like, well, okay, I got a little bit from that, but you know, and then I spent $100 on your thing, and I'm like, wow, all of a sudden I'm making money.
Right.
And I'm in control, you know, it's not just buying lottery tickets.
Sure. I could do a whole episode just on money I have wasted on my music career in the past. I've spent something like, if memory serves, as 20 or 30,000 on independent radio promo, and I mean, I did get some spins, but I didn't see
Yeah.
much of anything. You know, it's kind of hard to
Did they
track
buy
even.
your album? You know,
Not enough of them didn't, I can promise you that. It's hard to track at a certain point. You don't know exactly where the sales are coming from when you're doing that kind of, again, that kind of mainstream marketing. Very easy to track everything we're doing online. No, yeah, I mean, I certainly didn't even come close to recouping off that. And same thing with publicity. I've hired several publicists, spent over 10 grand a pop, and got one of them I spent 10 grand with for 3 months worth of publicity, biggest firm on the West Coast. And then I got, I think, one review in a college paper out of it. And
Nice.
yeah, I'm sh I, that probably got me a grand total of one sale. You know, I mean,
I
nothing
think I
really.
did a little bit better than you, but it
Yeah.
was still not great. And you know, it's not that those things aren't of value. I mean, you can get some credibility, which helps, helps you promote yourself. Like if you're getting
Certainly.
airplay, if you have reviews, and those things are, you know, those things are important. And I did get those things out of you know, having a publicist. I did get those things out of a radio promo, but I, you know, if my goal was just to sell CDs, you know, it didn't happen.
But I'd suggest you know, because again, just to clarify, I spent all that money well before I was involved in any of this online stuff years ago, when I was still sort of trying to play at the major labels game, and I would argue that if I had spent, you know, even a fraction of that money, just dumped it straight into online advertising, I would have probably seen a heck of a lot more in terms of publicity, because not to mention obviously sales, but because as you touched on yourself, like when you start doing this stuff, when you start pulling in all these people, you know, hundreds of people every single day coming to your site, signing up to your list, communicating with you, because they will email you, you'll see that you start getting fan letters every day. excuse me there, choking my coffee. But you'll start to see that people start reaching out to you and asking you to do interviews. You mentioned that you're getting subscribers that are bloggers and reviewers,
yeah,
that are wanting to give you press as a result. And you don't even have to, you know, sometimes go out and try and get it. It just starts coming to you. And there is a "if you build it, they will come" thing that happens. There's this synergy that takes place when you're interacting with that many people. People start talking. They start seeing
right.
you consistently if you're running paid ads. And you can create a tipping point of sorts, but it's happening on a micro scale instead of a macro scale, because we simply can't afford to do it on a macro scale like
right.
the major labels. But it's, I don't know, I believe that if I spent $10,000 in paid advertising, I'd probably get more press than I would had I just spent $10,000 on publicity.
Yeah, yeah. I get it.
I get it every day with you know, bloggers and podcasters and people reaching out to me because of something they've seen me doing as a marketer, and they're just interested, and they reach out and they want to do an interview, and suddenly I've got press out of it, and it happens all the time.
And that is a great thing. That is a great thing about, you know, the social media, Twitter, you know, Facebook. You know, you do run across people who are bloggers and they will give you press. I have my videos reposted, you know, all over the place now. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, what is the value of a subscriber or a fan. And, you know, I would say that, you know, even though I've calculated it to be 70 cents, I'd say it's more than that, you know, because of, you know, I get people reposting my videos. I get people, you know, giving me blog posts, press. I get people contacting me who offer me services. You know, for example, the guy who designed my logo, you know, did that for free just because he liked me. You know, those sorts of things.
Sure,
so.
Sure. Yeah, certainly. And another really, really important thing for you to remember, and you know, this is you know, I suppose it's good news, but it's also me, you know, scolding you a bit, is you don't really have any upsells yet. You don't have anything but your frontline product. You need once you're already profiting, and once you introduce some additional products into this funnel, you're going to see that subscriber value go way up. I mean, you mentioned talking about house concerts and wanting to do that. You send out a list or an email to your list offering house concerts, you're going to pick up some takers. And if they were paying $300 or $400 a pop, and you know, let's say they were paying $400 a pop, and you got 10 people to take you up on it, you suddenly added $4,000 to be averaged out amongst those subscribers, and you've got a lot
right.
more money to play with for advertising, and your business just continues to grow and grow. So there's a lot more.
I am working on
that. There's a lot more potential there that you haven't even tapped into, and that's something that people listening to this need to remember, that we're not, that is the real beauty here. We're not talking about just selling one CD. We're talking about building a network, you know, a pipeline that you have the ability to market to over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I think that that about covers it. I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to everyone and share your strategies. Again, I'm really impressed with Charlie. You can talk with Charlie in the Insider Circle, the Music Marketing Insider Circle. It's a mastermind community that I put together. There's monthly content, insider interviews, and more importantly, the Mastermind Forum, where you get to basically hang out online with myself and other musicians like Charlie and just kind of talk about what's working, what you're doing, and it's turned into a really nice little supportive community of like-minded musicians. And I think business-minded musicians were sort of a rare breed. There's not a ton of us out there, or certainly we're the minority. And it's nice to kind of have everybody in one place kind of talking shop.
I love the insider circle. I mean, just, you know, that, you know, especially the forum. I learn new stuff all the time, you know, from, you know, Steve or, you know, Jap or whoever. You know, there's a lot of great people. Want to encourage folks to, you know, if you're not on that forum, you need to get there. There's a lot of great stuff that's being shared.
Cool.
And, you know, you can go there and pose your questions and, you know, get responses. You know, I'm having trouble with this. What do you think? You know, so
right.
Anyway, just my little plug.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. And while we're at plug-in, just a reminder to check out Charlie's music. And again, if you're a musician who's interested in this, I recommend you sign up because you'll get to see a successful sales funnel. You know, working in real time, and you can check out a Squeeze page again at charlielanger.net. That's CharlieLanger, charlielanger.net, and there should be a link below this audio if you're listening to it on the blog. So that I think about covers it. Is there anything else we haven't touched on that you wanted to say?
I think that's it.
Awesome.
I'll just say, you know, John, I just really appreciate, you know, what you've shared, and you know, you've kind of messed me up as I said earlier, because, you know, I was just in it to sell, you know, some CDs, and what I'm finding is that it's just, you know, it's given me some hope. You know, it's kind of turned my world upside down. It's turned out to be much more than selling CDs.
Awesome.
And
that's really cool to hear.
I think if people will really, really do this and apply themselves, and, you know, you'll find that, you know, you can accomplish your goals. I mean, if it's to play live, you know, you can play more live. If you want to sell CDs, you can sell CDs. If you want to, you know, get your music licensed, you can license your music. But it's, you know, that having that subscriber base, you know, that email list, you know, your real fans, not just, you know, your Facebook fans.
Right.
Anyway, you've really helped me out a lot, and I do appreciate it.
Awesome. That's really cool to hear. Quite fittingly, I'm starting to have audio trouble over all of those nice things. the gods are.
Well, I guess we're done then. Huh?
I think that's our cue. But again, thank you so much for joining me on the call and for sharing all this stuff with my subscribers. I think you're a shining example of what a musician can do when they apply this stuff, and you've really taken it seriously, put in the hard work, and really paid attention to the process, which is cool to see. I mean, there are a number of people that I'm in contact with regularly, customers and members of the Insider Circle and such that are doing quite well with this. So I don't mean to leave them out, but I was really impressed by your. Not only your profit margin, but your attention to those metrics, because that's really the key. So well done. Thank you. And again, you know, everyone who's listening to this, thank you guys. Thanks for being subscribers and for taking the time to check out the content that I've been putting out. So thanks, Charlie, and we'll catch you in the forum.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, John. I do appreciate it.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. See ya.